So I did Miss South Africa in 2022, and that was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me in terms of learning to like leave people pleasing in the past. When I was about 16, I joined a community or like a subculture of We Hearted called Pro Anna, which stands for Pro Anorexia. I struggled with bulimia when I was in varsity, and I had like almost an out-of-body experience where I was looking down at the situation, like looking down into the bathroom stall at myself sitting there over the toilet. I think on the outside I looked like I had everything together, I had good grades, I was in church every Sunday.
Because you can go to church, you can even go to youth group and do everything that you basically could do and still not experience God.
The one night I was lying on my back and I looked down at my stomach and there was this lump in my lower abdomen. The doctor was like, well, your results came back. Yeah, it's malignant, grade 3. You're probably going to have to do chemo. But just the way I told you now, it was so cold and impersonal.
What thoughts do you have when you hear that you've got cancer and you're going to have to start treatment?
Knowing that I'm going to lose all my hair and like a lot of my identity. I didn't realize how much of my identity like sat in my hair specifically. God almost like forced me. He was like, now you're going to sit on a drip 7 hours a day and you're going to have nothing else to do but talk to me. Being a mom like really highlights all your areas where you're not like fully developed yet. There's always a blessing or something for you, like provision for you, even in like the darkest seasons of your life. All the incredible things that have happened since he told me that.
Sure.
I get emotional because like he did have a lot more planned for me.
Tamsin, what is the earliest context from your life that I need to better understand to better understand the woman that sits in front of me today?
So that's such a loaded question for me, but I was born and raised in Somerset West, which is obviously in the beautiful Cape Winelands. I went to school there, primary school, high school. Ek was 'n pliggie gewees op skool.
Oh, okay.
So my hele lewe het gedraai om skool en groen in skool. Prefect, I got good grades, captain of the netball team, all of that. So I think my definition of success was very much tied to excelling in a school environment. And then after school, after studies, I went to Stellenbosch University. I studied food science. Growing up, I always wanted to be like a medical doctor, but I just missed it with my academics. So I graduated with an 89% average, and that just was not good enough to get accepted into medicine at Stellenbosch. And so I thought, what's the next best thing? And I got accepted for dentistry. And then I was there for orientation day and
nope.
Then people also told me the stats about dentists, they have the highest suicide rate. And I was just like, you know what? I don't think this is for me. But I felt a lot of pressure to study in a field that was more left-brained orientated. Although I've always been much more of a creative person than I would say a logical person. Because of my upbringing and my background, I just considered a left brain fields like doctor, lawyer, engineer, all of that to be more successful than to be creative. So I ended up studying in that field. In my third year of studies, food science is 4 years long. My third year of studies, I realized that this is not where God wants me to be. I need to be in a field where my creativity can properly be nurtured and given a chance to shine, I would say, because I really believe God gave me a lot of talents in there, and I would never live a happy, fulfilled life if I didn't have like an outlet for that in my everyday career. So I made the shift to marketing. So after I graduated from Stellenbosch, my now husband and I had been doing a year and a half of long distance, and the consensus was somebody would have to move. Either I would have to move to Johannesburg or he would have to move to Cape Town. But just because I was kind of floating around after my studies, and looking for a job, I got a job in Johannesburg at a marketing agency. And so, yeah, it was quite an easy decision then for me to move up to Johannesburg. But yeah, I think I've always been. I was actually telling my husband Yaku the other night. I had a teacher in grade two. Her name was Mrs. Fuyun. And you know, you get those teachers that they have such a big impact in your life growing up, way more than what you think in that moment. But she had like a after school club called Groovy Girls, where we just would do like DIY projects, but it was like at her house. And she introduced me to journaling. She used to journal, and she used to like we would sit and decorate our journals, and like a scrapbook and things like that. And so naturally from doing that, I started to actually write in my journals, and she taught me how to keep a journal. How do you do diary entries? How do you log your goals and everything like that through journaling? And I think that was probably the best habit anyone could have taught me at 7, 8 years old, because it taught me how to be self-reflective and constantly be checking in with myself. With regards to where I want to be one day, where am I in accomplishing my goals? How do I get there, like in a practical way? So I think that habit really like formed my entire being eventually over the years, because I got to learn like this just the skill of self-reflection. So yeah, I think that was like quite like a habit that really formed who I am today, that I'm really grateful for. The negative part of that is that obviously I think I am sometimes overly self-analytical, where I actually end up being like my own enemy and my biggest critic. So I've always been like very critical of myself. I think it's only in recent years where I've really started to like let go of a lot of that, and just accept the way that, you know, God has made me, and not marinate in some of my decisions or yeah, some of my actions, just to sort of take the lessons from it instead. And yeah, I don't know what else to
I
tell
can
you really.
definitely hear a theme of the performance and the drive that you have. Where do you think that came from? Like, since obviously from a young age, like with schoolwork and captain and all of that, like where did that drive stem from?
So I grew up in quite a rocky household. So my parents were divorced when I was 10 months old, and my mother had to provide for us. When I say us, I mean my parents had actually adopted my cousin, but then the adoption didn't fully go through at that time. So I call her my sister, but she's actually my cousin. But my mom had to provide for me and for her after the divorce. I think her salary was like 4,000 rand a month. So I don't know how my mom did it. Still to this day, I have no idea how she did it. Obviously, I was young, so I didn't really think anything of it or notice anything of it. I just knew that I wanted more for myself than what I currently had, or the upbringing that I had. I wanted to be successful, and for me, the only way I thought I could get there in life is by doing well at school. So that was the only like sort of avenue or opportunity I had to make sure that I have better circumstances when I'm an adult than what I had when I grew up. And so, yeah, I just fully threw myself into doing well in that one specific area of my life.
And do you think you manage your drive and your emotional health well now at your age where you are now and looking back?
So I definitely didn't when I was growing up. I really struggled with anxiety. I also didn't have any sort of relationship with my father growing up. He moved to the US when I was 5 years old. And I think for a little girl to not have their father present in their life has a lot of like effects. So I always used to think, although today I know that that's not necessarily the truth. I used to think growing up that the only way I was going to get my dad's attention is if I am excelling or winning or, you know, being like the best at something. I don't know why I thought that, but that is, very much what my mindset was at the time. I think I just had to learn over the years to manage my anxiety, to also like choose what gives me anxiety, what will I let give me anxiety. And then, I think just obviously as I've grown and as my relationship with, the Lord has sort of matured and deepened, like through everything that I've been through in my life, I've definitely grown a lot in that aspect, but it was definitely something that probably held me back a lot more than what I realized when I was growing up.
Do you still feel that you are maybe consciously or subconsciously yearning for that, not necessarily approval, but that that reach or that acceptance from your father?
I think as I sit here today on this couch, I can like confidently say no, but it was something that's actually a recent development for me. It was something that really for my whole life was an issue. And not just sort of from my father specifically, but I think just from other people in general, other people's opinions of me, like completely ruled my life. People pleasing is something that I've really had to work hard to overcome. I still struggle with it. it's definitely like I've grown a lot in that aspect for sure.
What shifted? Like what happened in your life that gave you a different perspective?
So I did Miss South Africa in 2022 and that was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me in terms of learning to like leave people pleasing in the past. Because when I'd entered, I was not prepared for all the criticism that comes with putting yourself on a platform where you're literally asking people to judge you. I don't know what I thought, but I just was not prepared to have people have so many opinions about me that weren't true or weren't grounded in anything substantial. They might have seen a 15-second clip of you. And then what people tend to do is they put you in a box and they have like this whole narrative that they build around you as a person based on small snippets of information that they're given about you. So I actually dyed my hair blonde intentionally when I entered Miss South Africa because I felt that I needed to do something to stand out. In that year, there weren't a lot of blonde applications. But my whole life I've been a brunette. And I think with just like that small appearance change, there's a lot of like association that comes with having blonde hair versus having dark hair. For example, people think that blondes aren't as intelligent, that they're nicer than brunettes, which is very interesting. What else? And that they're just not as competent. And I really felt that when I changed my hair color, which is actually crazy to say. But they would take something small, like a small piece of information, like the color of my hair, and they would attach a lot of other information to that. And then that is the box that they placed you in, and you're not getting out of it. Once people have made their mind up about you, it's really difficult to change it. Mm. And in some cases, there's nothing you can do to change it. And it goes both ways. So it was like criticism. So my husband and I have a 16-year age gap. With that relationship comes a lot of attached, not stereotypes, but like ideas that people get from that information, because he's successful and he's older than me. So there was a lot of criticism around that. But then it also went the other way, where I felt that there were a lot of people saying that, like, oh, I'm so sweet and I'm so this and that. And I also know that not to be true of myself. So I think Miss SA, like competing in Miss South Africa, where you're putting yourself on a platform and you like asking people to judge you, made me realize that like people's opinions should mean absolutely nothing to you, because they're grounded in like very little information. And yeah, they don't really impact you at the end of the day. So I remember after Miss South Africa, we were actually standing, I was standing in top five, and they were going to call the top three forward. And I remember being nervous, and I thought to myself, please don't call me. And it was so crazy to me in that moment that you have to get to that point to realize you actually don't want something that you've worked so hard for. And I just felt this massive like weight like lift off of me. I walked backstage. I was so happy. I was so like at peace. And in that moment, I also almost felt like the weight of like people's opinions lift off of me as well. So I think, yeah, I think that was probably the most transformative process for me in terms of realizing like how superficial people's ideas of you are and how little of it is actually grounded in truth. And yeah, that just made me sort of, it gave me a really interesting perspective that I don't think a lot of people have the opportunity to get in their life.
Mm. I heard a quote the other day, I think it was on Chris Williamson's podcast, where he said, people can only hurt us to the degree that we believe what they say is true. And I thought that's power, like, because it is true. Like, we usually get more offended about the things that we believe that maybe there's some truth there, and that hurts. And I think in a situation like that, where you are bombarded with feedback and like unwanted and unwarranted feedback and commentary and perceptions and all of that stuff, it takes a deep dive into your character to find the strength to not believe those little voices. And I think especially with social media as well, which I kind of want to lean into now, with how that also contributes such a big deal to how we have given other people a platform that you don't know from a bar of soap to say something that will ruin your Monday, for example. But you also being in social media and understanding the depth of that, how do you think social media is shaping the way we live? And even for females, like how we perceive beauty and competence and all of that.
So I'm so grateful that I like got to have a high school experience without social media, because I think if you don't know who you are and you don't know, like, you're not rooted in your values yet, you haven't like forged that compass for yourself, I think social media can be extremely damaging. But it's also, it's a tool. So you can also decide what you give attention to, and then you'll be shown more of that. So on the one end, obviously, like, we're just seeing people's highlight reels and we're thinking that's normal, this is all baseline where it's actually not. It's like the best of the best that people are choosing to share. And so you're comparing your life or your appearance or whatever it is to highlight reels. And that's making you feel like what you have is inadequate. And so like longing for more all the time. I think that could be a huge issue. I see it actually with my employees who are all sort of Gen Zs. They have this perception that they should be living a better life than what they are currently. And when I really try to dive into like why they're thinking that, it comes down to social media and what they're constantly seeing other people their age accomplishing on social media, but they don't know the context of it. So
and
they
it's
don't
like
know.
The 1% of the population within that demographic.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. But on the other side of it is there's obviously great content on social media. Like I learn so much on social media every single day about psychology, self-development. So you can curate your feed as well. And I think when you're feeling like yourself dissociating a little bit from the content you're seeing on social, then you kind of have to do a deep dive on over why are you giving those things attention instead of like all the positive things on social media, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you're pretty raw and authentic on social media. Like I think you have a balance of sharing the highlight reels, but also the real This Is Life, especially with the last year of your journey. Is it important for you to be that authentic? Is it important for you? Are you actually making an effort to be as open as possible to do it the right way?
I think that's something that actually just comes naturally. I'm an oversharer for sure. I've had people, family members in my life that would tell me, listen, that's not for social media. That's not something you should be sharing on social media. And I've had to sort of pull myself back and decide, okay, but like, should I listen to that or not? Like specifically with my cancer journey, there were a lot of family members that felt that that's something you don't broadcast to the world. It's a personal journey. And for a while, because there were so many of them that came to me and told me that, I was like, well, these are obviously people that love me and that want the best for me, and they're in my corner. If there's so many of them saying this to me, maybe I should like take a step back and just consider what it is that they have to say about it. And yeah, I prayed about it, and ultimately, I just think that like God like shapes us as human beings for a reason. I don't think anything that happens in your life or happens to you is accidental. I feel like it's all there to shape you, to be a certain way for His kingdom. So if this has happened to me, like there must be a reason why, this is happening to me and I who am who I am. So I always just try to like lean into that. And I felt a lot of confirmation that this is a story that I need to be sharing as openly and honestly as I can. And yeah, for me, there was validation for me when there were two other women that were reporting symptoms to me. They said they're not sure if they should go to the doctor. There were many women that said that to me, but two of them actually did get diagnosed with ovarian cancer, which is the same one that I had. And that's a type of cancer that you usually pick up stage 3 or stage 4 when you can't do anything about it. So if you can pick it up in the early stages, like you can absolutely save your own life. And that's what happened with them.
True.
So if I had not shared my story and they had not seen that, would they have gone? They might have, but I believe that there's obviously a reason I had to do that. And still to this day, I get a lot of women messaging me that says that they're they feel like they're ready to take their health seriously
Wow.
and go for that checkup. So yeah, I try to be as honest as I can on social media. Honestly, sometimes I still have to censor myself to not overshare
Filter.
things that are not supposed to be on social media. But yeah, that's something that comes naturally to me, I would say.
Take me back to maybe just the build up until you found out about the cancer, like the 2 weeks leading up to that moment, like what your life was like before cancer, and then that moment when you woke up and you felt that you had to go. Like, take me to that moment.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I was like in a great space in my life. My business just started growing, and I was scared to hire a new hire. So I just took on everything myself, and I'm a bit of a perfectionist, which means I'm a little bit of a tough boss to work for as well. And I know that because I want things 100% right. And I know that that's not possible. And it's obviously really difficult when you're hiring, to find somebody that will do things the way that you want them to be done. It's not always possible. So I was just taking more and more and more on my plate. And I am a mom as well. At that stage, my son was like a year and a half old. So I had a very busy, very stressful time in my life. And I'd felt a pain in my right stomach. But a week before that, my son had like jumped on me. On my stomach, and so I thought it was just an injury from him tackling me, essentially. And then my stomach started growing at like quite a rapid rate, and obviously, like us females, we go through a lot on a monthly basis, so you kind of just chalk it up to, oh well, it's part of bloating from my cycle, or well, I don't know what this is, but okay, sure. Especially also after you've had children, just like a lot of weird things happening in your body often, so you don't take them seriously. And the one night I was lying on my back and I looked down at my stomach and there was like an indentation, so my ribs went down and then there was this lump in my lower abdomen, and I was like, this is not bloating. This is not right. And obviously, like, we have ChatGPT now, which is a great tool, but also not something you should be on. And ChatGPT was like, you have cancer. And I'm like, ugh. So,
what do you know?
Yeah, and then the next day, it was like about 20% bigger. Wow. And then I started panicking. And I told my husband, no, I'm going to the emergency ward of the hospital. And long story short, because there were lots of issues with my medical aid and which hospitals I was allowed to go to and everything, they told me I've got a teratoma in my stomach. And now I'm Googling a teratoma. And you'll see if you Google it, like the images that pop up for what a teratoma looks like. I feel like I need to actually show you. Context. I just started laughing when they told me that, because I'm like, of course this will happen to me. Like, it's honestly the weirdest thing that I've ever seen in my life. It looks like a little monster. It's like a mass of cells that differentiate into specialized tissue. So you'll have some lung tissue in there. Some teratomas have teeth, some of them have hair, eyeballs, like, wow. Just random pieces of organs in it. And so I just started laughing when they told me that that's what I have.
Yeah.
But they weren't sure where it was located, like in my stomach, because it was so big. It was 18 centimeters, so about this size.
Wow.
And it had been growing because it was pulling in fluid so rapidly. So they were like, we're just going to start cutting. We know it needs to go out and you might lose your ovary due to ovarian torsion if we don't operate. But this was on Easter weekend 2025, so I couldn't get clearance from my medical aid because it was a public holiday, so they didn't answer to give clearance or anything. So there's a lot of drama and stress related to the actual surgery, getting approval for it. And so they took it out. The incision they made was a very long one because they started cutting me on my right side, because I reported pain on my right, but it was actually sitting on my left. And I had pain because it was pushing my organs.
Yeah.
So they ended up doing an incision, like hip bone to hip bone, which is something that's very painful to recover from. So I was in the hospital for many days. I struggled to walk. Like every time I would get up, I would just vomit from the pain. It was like on another level. And of course, like it's challenging because my child is still a baby. So, we had to separate. I couldn't see him. I couldn't be in the same room with him because he's a little boy. He doesn't understand. He wants to jump on you. So it was like a really challenging time, but in my head, I thought, okay, well, they've removed the teratoma and typically they're benign, cysts, so about only 5 of them are cancerous, so I didn't have a worry that the results would come back and it would be malignant. And so I went to change my dressing and the doctor was like, well, your results came back. Yeah, it's malignant, grade 3, you're probably gonna have to do chemo. But just the way I told you now, just so cold and impersonal. Wow. She was like, okay, but let's go change your dressing quickly. And I had so many questions. And like my husband and I, like all the blood just drained from our face. And we were like, what? Like, what did you have to say? And I just started crying in the car on the way home because I was like partially in shock and partially just actually really angry at like how this information was relayed to me. And then obviously, went home, did a whole lot of research on like all the terms that she'd used, and I had the results printed out in front of me. So it was actually such a crazy diagnosis when I'd found like my oncologist, and the oncologist that I was going to like, you know, go through this journey with, he was amazing, but he actually told me, listen, I've never seen anything like this before, because technically it was ovarian cancer because it was on my ovary, but the cancer was inside the teratoma and the cancerous cells were early brain cells. What? Inside the teratoma, because the teratoma is like a mix of different tissues. So he just said, I'm not sure what to do here, but I can, let me consult the studies around anything like this, but it's like less than 0.01% of ovarian cancers or something like this. So he wasn't sure, should I be doing chemotherapy or not? So it was like a long process to sort of get clarity on whether I need to be doing chemo or not, because they technically already removed it. And the consensus was just that if there was anything left over, it also had burst in my body when they removed it. If there's any of those cancerous cells that are now in my body, then they're so aggressive that we cannot afford to not do chemotherapy. And so, yeah, I think I was lucky in the sense that I never really feared for my life during my cancer journey. But knowing that I had to go through chemo, and the chemo I went through is one of the toughest that you can go through. It's worse than the red devil that they usually give you for breast cancer, because it also affects your lungs. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I'm going to lose all my hair and like a lot of my identity, I didn't realize how much of my identity like sat in my hair specifically, in my physical appearance, but in my hair as like a big part of that. That was like really tough to wrap my head around. And yeah, cried many, many tears. But yeah, that's basically how it went down. I had to do 3 rounds of BEP chemo. So BEP is BEP, it's bleomycin, etoposide, and This is Platinum. And that lasted from April to August of 2025.
Sure.
Yeah.
What goes through your mind when you get the news? You said you didn't necessarily fear for your life, but what type of thoughts do you have when, even when it's presented in such a cold manner? But what goes through your mind? Like, what thoughts do you have when you hear that you've got cancer and you're going to have to start treatment?
I think in the beginning, I just, like, had a ringing in my ears. I didn't have any thoughts. And then obviously your brain starts to try to make sense of this information. And then you think about your work, your employees, your clients, the people that rely on you. Your family. I was worried about my son, like how who's going to fulfill the role that I fulfill in his life. At that stage, also worried about my marriage. There's a stat that says 70% of men leave their wives after a cancer diagnosis. That's a very high statistic. You kind of run through everything one by one and you're like, what about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? You know, am I going to be okay after going through chemo? Like, how am I going to feel? So, yeah, it's just kind of a jumble of thoughts. And for in my case, like worst case scenarios, because I like to plan for worst case scenarios and be surprised when things actually aren't so bad. Which is funny because my husband has the opposite approach. He's kind of, he's got the full stress mentality where you just pretend nothing's wrong. So we had a lot of fights about that because he would tell me, no, but I need to focus on this and that. And I'm like, you don't understand what I'm going through. So yeah, it was just kind of a mess upstairs, to be honest.
And you mentioned the hair loss and how it affected you. And I think especially having had your experience as Miss South Africa and all, and being a beauty enthusiast, like, why do you think beauty was such a big deal for you? Why was it such a big part of your identity?
So this is something I've had to like really unpack for myself and more than once in my life. So my mom was a musician and she also modeled when she was younger. And so her idea of success was in the entertainment industry, I would want to say. But to be recognizable and to be beautiful, that was her qualities that she deemed sort of successful. And so growing up, I really didn't have any interest in that. But I felt not pressure, but I felt my mom wanted me to like explore dancing and acting and modeling. And the one big one that, because I had zero talent with the rest of them, the one that was like showing a bit of promise was modeling. So she got me into an agency when I was 15 and I was just way too young at that stage. And the agency I was with didn't have my best interest at heart at all. I still remember, because I've always been, I'm not overweight. I've never been overweight, but I'm not a runway model and that is not my genetics. And I would have to starve myself to achieve that. And even if I do that, I might still not look like that. So what they would do is they would literally give me a diet that I needed to follow. And it was like have a piece of brown toast and a grapefruit the whole day. And then I'm at school like from 6 o'clock in the morning until 11 p.m. every day. And that's the only like sustenance I would have. But then they would do this thing where they would tell me there's a scout coming from Dubai and he's going to be here in 2 months and he loves your look. And if he gets here and he sees you and he likes you, then you're basically going to be like world famous because you're going to go to Milan and Paris and this and that. And obviously when you're young, you're like, okay, yes, yeah, cool. And they would be like, but your hips are 100, they need to be 98 when he gets here. And then I would be like, okay, that's easy, like 2 centimeters, like easy. And then July would roll around, which is when they would tell me he's coming. And then they'd be like, no, he delayed, he's only coming in August. But you need to be 96. And so they kept doing that, and eventually I realized there is no one coming.
Oh, wow.
No one's coming. This is like they're literally just trying to motivate me to get into those measurements, to book jobs. And I think when you're an adult, I think like now that I'm older, I realize, you know, modeling, and I work with brands as well, you need to have a certain look for certain brands. But when you're 15 and you hear that sort of, all you hear is that you're not good enough. And you don't fit quite where you need to be fitting into. So I think that was really dangerous for me. And when I was about 16, I joined a platform called WeHearted, which is very much like Pinterest, but it was more for girls, like young girls. And I joined a community or like a subculture of WeHearted called Pro Anna, which stands for Pro Anorexia.
Sure.
And it's actually so crazy to say, like, now that I think how small I was, actually. But it was, like, a community of girls that would, like, motivate each other in their eating disorders. And just being exposed to that at that age was really dangerous for me. It, like, I don't know, something in my brain hit uitgaak. And so I always associated like success. Like I will never be truly happy or successful if I'm not thin. And not thin, like thin. And I carried that with me. But I think it was always like difficult because when you're still under your parents' roof, like you can't really do crazy things because they're monitoring you. But then when I started going to university, obviously you have a sense of freedom. You don't have your parents like sort of watching out over you all the time. And that is really when my eating disorder like grew roots. So I struggled with bulimia when I was in varsity. And that was like really like soul destroying for me. And it was like such a terrible thing because I think on the outside I looked like I had everything together. I had good grades. I was in church every Sunday. But then I would be the only person that knows when I go home. Like I've got this like darkness like that I'm carrying everywhere. And I just felt like such a liar to myself. I just felt like my whole life is actually like a big lie because front facing I'm this way, but then actually like, you know, I have this like thing that I'm struggling with that nobody knows about other than me. And there was a moment where I ate like a whole pizza and a whole tub of ice cream, and then I purged and there was like blood in the toilet.
True.
And I had like almost an out of body experience where I was looking down at the situation, like looking down into the bathroom stall at myself sitting there over the toilet. And I just felt God say to me, like, I've got more planned for you than this moment. Like there's such big things planned for you. You need to overcome this. This is not part of what I have in store for you. And so, yeah, from then I went to a psychologist. And I really tried to like do a deep dive into why do I have this mindset that I need to look a certain way in order to be like happy and to be proud of myself. Because it was a case of like I could have accomplished like every other dream that I have in my life. Like I could be excelling in every other area, but if I didn't look a certain way, then it meant nothing. And I had to really like get into like why is that the case. And so my psychologist like really helped me unpack that, and it had a lot to do with like obviously my upbringing and kind of always feeling like I was just never like really good enough, and control as well. Like, so much of your life you don't have control over, but you can control like what you put in your body, what you do with your body. So yeah, I think in the process of healing, I had to get really like honest with myself, and vulnerable with myself, and try to like figure out why is that thought patterns that I have. And to be honest, like it's something, if you've grown up believing that your whole life, it's really hard to undo that. So that even now, even today, I still have those thoughts, but at least now I can recognize them for what they are. And they don't have power over me, but there's still some times when, especially after having a baby, like when you're postpartum, where like genes don't sit the way they used to, then you can feel that thought process or that thought pop into your head that you're not good enough. But I think now it's easy for me to just like let it pass over and not necessarily affect, like not let it like translate into an action, if that makes sense. Mm. Yeah.
When you mentioned that moment, where God said, I've got plans for you, you got emotional. Why was that such a big deal for you? Was it that you finally felt that you didn't have to perform in such a way to be seen or be accepted?
I think it's, when I look at my life in hindsight now, everything that's happened, all the incredible things that have happened since he told me that,
sure.
I get emotional because like he did have a lot more planned for me. Ugh, call me Ayaldi.
It's okay.
Yeah, so I'm just like, I'm in awe of him and like how he's moved in my life. It's been incredible.
When you say the things that he has blessed you with, are you referring to things like your family, your husband, opportunities, or what comes to mind?
I think just the fact that I have a platform now, and obviously a lot of that came from competing in something like Miss South Africa. But recently I feel that, you know, that was maybe my starting point, but it's grown into something so much cooler than that, where women like genuinely follow me because, yeah, for many different reasons, I suppose, but also like in sharing my journey, like how I deal with hardships. Mm-hmm. And then of course, like the impact I have through the work that I do in my agency, the young women that I like mentor, my employees, like how I'm able to sort of guide them through difficult phases in their own life and help them grow as human beings because of the things that I've had to go through and overcome, and the skill sets that I've sort of adopted through that. So I think it's just like that's so fulfilling for me. So yeah, it's just, and I feel like now I can feel that like God is like almost wanting to take me to the next level now, where I feel like I've let go of like so many things holding me back, false identities that I've been holding on to for so long. I feel like now I'm really truly in a place where I can like be the leader I've always wanted to be. And yeah, I'm just kind of excited to see like what he does with me now that I'm like this, I'm like a tool, a weapon for his kingdom at the moment. So yeah, it's just like a really incredible full circle moment for me to think back to that moment where I was really at the lowest point of my life, to like the woman that I am today, and everything that had to happen to forge me into this. But I wanted to share, when I was starting that process of, you know, overcoming my eating disorder, there was a woman then that went viral on America's Got Talent. Her name was Nightbird. And she was, she was suffering from stage 4, stage 3 cancer when she performed. And the piece went absolutely viral. And I Googled her. And then I saw that she actually keeps a blog. And I read her blog. And, like, her writing is the most incredible thing I've ever read in my life. Like, her writing style is so raw and vulnerable. And one of the pieces in her blog, she just published it when I read it the first time, is called God is on the Bathroom Floor. And it was basically about how when she was going through chemo, because she'd been through it 3 times, she often found God on the bathroom floor when she was, like, at her weakest moments. And how, like, going through all of the hardships, like, actually strengthened her relationship with God. But she would wrestle with him, and she would, like, really spend a lot of time with him, because that's the only thing that she could do in that in that state, is she could just be alone with her thoughts on the bathroom floor. And when I read it the first time, I found significance in the title, God is on the Bathroom Floor, because that is also where I feel like he had an intervention with me. And then years later, obviously, like, with her being diagnosed with cancer, and then my diagnosis, I almost felt like I was equipped to handle this. Because I was following her whole journey until the day that she obviously passed away. There's so many, like, parallels and full circle moments in that.
I still remember hearing that song for the first time that she sang. And
I don't even remember the song anymore. Remember the blog article.
It was so good. But one moment that stuck with me, I think this is what happened. But I think Simon asked her how she is. Just a normal question, like when she came on stage, and she said, "I'm good," or something like that. And I was like, knowing the story now, I was like, how could you say that with so much confidence, that you are good, having that battle and that struggle? It just feels like, and on stage where all of those people are watching you. But it was just like the amount of peace that she had within her to answer something like that so confidently, where she wasn't attention seeking, she wasn't there for anybody else, but just to broadcast God's grace on her life and share her story, which has affected so many people here we are in South Africa.
There's a piece in that article where she talks about daily manna. So she was talking about how the Israelites were in the wilderness for like 40 years, and their prayers were just to, like, reach the promised land. And God didn't answer that prayer, but he answered other prayers that they didn't pray. She said, like, their shoes never wore out, and every day they got their daily manna, their daily bread, like, from the heavens. And they couldn't take more than what they needed for that day, because next day they would get that day's portion of their manna, or their daily bread. And so that, like, was a big mindset shift for me in how I should be dealing with, like, challenging seasons in my life, is, like, you can just look for your daily manna for that day. So she was saying, like, one day it was just the sunlight streaming in through the window.
Wow.
And another day it was, like, being wrapped up in a blanket that her friend knitted for her. That was her daily manna. And so I think I learned that when you go through challenges, the best thing is to just be as present as possible and to look for, like, the grace and the goodness and the provision in that moment, even if you're on the bathroom floor. There's always, she said, she would just watch the little insects in the grout, and that would, like, be her daily manna. At certain points in her journey, obviously. And so that's really, like, a mindset that I've adopted in my life, not just with, like, going through something like chemo, but anything. There's always something wonderful for you to find in that like pit that you're in. And I always think about, like, how stressed I was and how God almost, like, forced me. It's like, now you're gonna sit on a drip 7 hours a day and you're gonna have nothing else to do but talk to me. when you lose your job, okay, you've lost your job now, but now you have time, the time that you didn't have, you now have that. So there's always like, there's always a blessing or something for you, like provision for you, even in like the darkest seasons of your life. And so, yeah, that's the analogy she made with like the daily manna and the Israelites was also like really significant for me.
If you had quite a story up until this point in terms of difficult upbringing, the eating disorder, the cancer, if you had a room full of, let's say, between 23 and 27-year-old ladies sitting in front of you, what would you tell them? Like, what is the biggest learnings that you just feel that you need to impart on those young souls to give them just a glimpse of what you are experiencing now?
I think I'm in a place now, a wonderful place, where I finally sort of feel free of the opinions of others. I've gone through these hardships and I know that I can do it. But it's not like a confidence in myself. It's a confidence like in God. So I know that if there's something that needs to happen, like he's going to provide and he's going to show, like he's going to step in that gap. So I don't have to be anything other than what I am or be anybody else than what I am and how he's made me to be. Because if it's his will, then it will happen like that. And so I was saying to my husband, I almost feel like my inner child is like coming out again, where you're uninhibited. You've not let like the world shape and form you yet. Like you're just full of joy and like innocence, and you're free when you're a child. You don't worry about all of those things that you do when you're an adult. And I almost feel like now's the first time that my inner child can actually like be.
Wow.
And obviously I'm a mom. So like, for example, I would take my son to the play park and I would go down the slide, but it's like, I'm actually going down the slide because I like, I want to go down the slide. It's not for him, it's for me. And dancing in the kitchen again for the first time since I can remember, like from childhood. And just finding like joy, like allowing myself to like see little things and find joy in it. And yeah, I guess just like stop letting like insecurities and social pressure and all of that like rule my life. I feel like I've almost been set free from that, and I'm just at a place of like deep peace within myself and knowing that if something happens, like God is gonna be there for me. So I almost feel like, you know, like a child again. And that's honestly like the best feeling in the entire world. I remember when I was a teenager, we would have beach days and I love the ocean. Like it's my favorite happy place, but I would never go swim because I was so insecure of my body. So I would sit on the sand and watch everybody's things and watch my friends go swim. And I just think about how much of life I missed out on because of all these like things that I've been holding on to, like these false identities that I've formed for myself. But it's difficult because I don't know how to impart that onto another human being. I feel like you kind of have to go on your own journey to get to that point in your life. So I think maybe like my biggest piece of advice would be that you just need to look for the grace and provision in each challenge or each difficult season that you're navigating. And yeah, I think obviously like I don't know where I would be if I didn't have my relationship with God. I don't know how I would have like processed any of that information, or yeah, I just don't know how I would have navigated all of that without him. So I think that relationship is integral to like truly being happy and feeling fulfilled in your life.
Have you always had such a close relationship with God?
No.
Did it mature closer to when the challenges came, or when did it?
I didn't grow up in a Christian household, so my exposure came from my friends at school, like taking me with them to youth group. And usually youth group is it's not really where you get to learn more about God. It's more about like having fun, like fun activities and things like that. But obviously that led me to like starting to read my Bible and things like that. And then, yeah, when I was in university and I was struggling with my eating disorders, I think there I was at a crossroads where I was like, I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I believe in God. I don't know if I want to be a Christian. But then I would also the next week be in church and be crying. So it was like a lot of push and pull. I think for me, I wish somebody would have told me that it's okay to wrestle with God, to not understand. You're not like not pure of heart, or you're not a bad person if you question some things about Christianity, and it's good to do that, to lament, they call it. It's good to lament, and it's good to wrestle with him and ask questions, and then go and seek those answers. But to not do any of that actually creates like a very superficial form of faith, because it's not been tested yet. So I wish somebody told that to me. But obviously in my healing journey and having to like overcome my eating disorder, that was my relationship with him, and like prayer and just getting to know him better was like integral for me to overcome that season in my life. My psychologist that was helping me overcome this, the minute, because she asked me, are you Christian? And I said, yes. And she's like, okay, well, then I'm going to do something completely different. And she was like, you have to treat this thing like it's outside of you. It's not part of you. Like, your eating disorder is not part of your identity. It's like a almost an external entity, like a demon, or like, yeah, personify it. And she told me that the minute you can personify the things that you're struggling with, like addiction, because eating disorders and addiction gets treated very similar, it's similar brain pathways. If you can externalize it and turn it into like an entity, it's a lot easier for you mentally to overcome it, because you can recognize when it's you and when it's that external force almost. And yeah, just all the studies around coping with addiction in that matter, like AAA, Alcoholics Anonymous, they're a Christian-based organization. That's the method they use, and they're one of the most successful organizations in the world because they use that method. And so that was also fascinating to me, on how scientific it is to actually almost like be aware of like the spiritual realm in overcoming like addiction and like stuff like eating disorders.
Something I also learned recently was that whole battling with God. Like, I think in our lives we have this perception, especially if you're growing up in a typical Christian in here environment, like it's like Christianity or religion, or Christian religion, is in perfection because Jesus was perfect. But it doesn't breed intimacy at all. Like, and I think you can tick the boxes, you can go to church, you can even go to youth group and do everything that you basically could do to tick the boxes as a Christian and still not experience God in his most authentic, most brutal form. And I think that's why the Bible is so full of not the perfect stories, not the perfect people, not the perfect stories.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much more that we can actually learn from that than the perfection stories, that we can just, if we come to him more raw, more open on the bathroom floor, pleading, that there would be much more of a breakthrough in your life than just trying to go through the emotions of feeling Christian and ticking boxes and stuff like that.
I think like we're just scared of that intimacy. We feel that we are not worthy of that. And so we think that our actions, like going to church and doing everything right, qualifies us to have an audience with him, when that's not how God works at all. And so I think that's a big challenge that like Christians have, because then what you end up with is a really shallow,
superficial
form of faith. That when you go through a challenging time, that's not the thing that you turn to. But one of my colleagues, when I just finished my chemo journey, she took a photo of me while I was on my drip in the treatment room. And behind me, there was a piece of artwork. It was like butterflies coming out of a tree. There was like this beautiful image. And she printed a Bible verse on it, 2 Corinthians 12. Can't remember the verse. And it was like, for when you are weak, you are strong. Meaning that in your weakest, when you have nothing in your life but to turn to God, that is actually when you're at your strongest, because your faith is at its strongest. And so it's a good thing to go through hardship, because how else would you, you know, have the need to turn to him, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's just be, I've framed it, it's on our fireplace.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
If you look ahead, like you mentioned success quite a few times in our conversation, what does success look like for you? Like what type of framing do you have when you feel that you are having a good life or will have a good life?
So it's obviously changed a lot through the last couple of years. Becoming a mother obviously changed that massively for me. As they say, last year's health problems. I think right now, I can't remember the Bible verse now, but it's like, you want to hear the words like,
good and faithful servant.
Good and faithful servant. So I just want to like open my life up to God and be obedient. When he says move, I want to move. And so I think I measure success in impact now. How are you changing people's lives? How are you moving people closer to God? And right now, I would say it's literally just by sharing my story with people, what I've been through, how I dealt with it, and how he was like my rock through it, or how he led me through that challenging season. So sharing my testimony, but I think he's got bigger plans than that as well. And sometimes I feel him telling me I need to do something. Like I drove past a random person's house and he's like, knock on the door and ask to go inside. And I was like, my introverted self. I'm like, no. And it's so funny, because I was telling my mom this story and she's like, I know the people at that house.
No way.
And she was like, no, they want you to come. Go have tea in their house. And I'm just like, what do I say to these people? Like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, the Holy Spirit said I should be here, but I don't know why I'm here. So things like that, where I feel like I just need to be obedient wherever he's taking me. I think like my larger purpose is obviously, not obviously, for me it's obvious, but... like, I know that I need to work with young women because I feel like I understand their struggles and their psyche really, really well. And I feel like I'm equipped to help them. But I don't know how that looks exactly. I don't know in what shape that is going to, you know, I don't know what the plan is there. Right now, I just know that my employees are like my little group that I'm responsible for right now, and I need to do that well, and then yeah, I guess we'll see where God takes me after that. But I think definitely my success is measured in the impact that I'm having on other people's lives. Also, like how people feel when they leave my presence. Like, are they feeling inspired or at peace or comfortable, safe? Yeah, just what impact are you having on the lives of the people around you?
What type of struggles do you think the Gen Z generation is going through? What do you see in
Mainly.
Your team? Yeah, all of them.
I think entitlement is a big one, and comparison. But I almost feel like the entitlement comes from comparison, where again they're thinking that their lives need to look a certain way. I also think that there's such a lack of purpose in their lives. I would say more so with young men. Like, I can see it. Obviously, I have a boy as well, so I think about how he's going to grow up in this world that we're living in now, and it scares me a lot because I don't know how much influence I'll personally have on his life. There's so much that you can't control. But I think young men are really, like, struggling to see, like, where they fit into society. And I think young men need to feel like they're needed somewhere. They need responsibility in order to feel, like, properly fulfilled. And then, yeah, I think young women, I think there's a lack of, like, good role models in the media, like, in the kind of, there's not a lot to aspire to if you look at Hollywood, if you look at all the famous influencers right now, podcasters, because that's also a massive form of content that they're consuming. Yeah, I just think a lack of godly women present in the media. Obviously they exist, but just the coverage that they get versus all the other characters on the reality TV shows and things like that. I think it's so easy to get confused as to, like, what's really important in life. Even if you are a Christian, I think those outside influences, not influencers, outside influences have a much bigger impact than what they're realizing. And yeah, I work with a lot of teenagers. They're so worried about the opinions of other people. They're so scared to do anything, to say anything, to, like, have an opinion on anything, because they're just so worried it's not the right one. And that really breaks my heart, because obviously I've been through that. And, like, I just want to, like, shake them sometimes. Like, they almost, like, they're so stagnant in their life because they're too scared to do anything because they're worried about the opinions of other people.
And it cripples them.
It cripples them is a really good way to phrase it. But yeah, they're just kind of, like, numb, and there's no fire in them. They don't know what they like. And yeah, it's just, like, really, really sad to see that.
I think it's a condition of our age, in terms of we're inundated with decisions and options. Like, you can become anything you want, literally, apart from the typical career path. I mean, like, literally, you can make a you can wake up one morning and decide that you want to be something. And I believe that this is probably coming back to the Bible as well, but, like, if you have all these options, if you can do everything, it's not good. That's not what we should be doing. Like, we should be, we are made for more, to be obedient in more specific things, and like that. So for me, it's like, we got to a point where we are so oversaturated with access and opportunity that it almost cripples us, that we don't know what to do, or the younger generations don't know what to do, because they're so overflood with opportunities and stuff like that, that they don't, and they don't have the confidence, the internal groundedness to be confident in a decision, to just decide, I'm going to do that and I'm going to stick with it.
I think also the thing is, like, if anything gets difficult, they want to jump ship way too early. Whereas if you just kept at it for longer, you know, anything you do, like, it has ups and downs. Entrepreneurship is a great example of that. If we had to quit every time it gets difficult, like, you would never get anywhere. You just have to, like, restart all the time. And so that's also something I've seen a lot in the younger generations, is that they just don't know how to, like, cope with sitting in discomfort. They don't know how to be bored either, like, to just do nothing. They can't just do nothing. But yeah, it's I think I'm in for an interesting journey as my son obviously grows up. And yeah, there's been times I thought maybe I should homeschool him, but I don't think that's good for anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, I don't know what the fix is necessarily. Yeah.
What has being a mom told you? Or what are you learning currently from being a mom?
I think being a mom, like, really highlights all your areas where you're not, like, fully developed yet. So obviously, like, your patience. Yeah, your patience gets tested a lot, but just, like, being able to control your own moods, like, not to get, like, you need to be the stable, grounded person in their life. And yeah, like, obviously you're just human, so if things happen then you get angry, and you can't get angry. You have to be the one that calms your child down. So that, and yeah, I think also, again, the love that you have for your child is so immense and so life-changing. Like, any decision I make, like, on the way, yeah, I wanted to change lanes, but it was, like, a little bit risky. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to go for it. And then I was like, no, you can't. You've got a child back home. So it, like, really impacts all your other decisions in your life. I was going to say something now.
But I think I've heard that so many times from moms with toddlers, that it exposes their weaknesses, or it brings out the things that they do feel that they still have to work on.
Yes, 100%.
Or like they uncover their flaws, which is interesting because they don't necessarily expect you to be perfect. They don't know the frame of reference for what perfect would look like.
Yeah.
But we have that responsibility to just be the best role model that you can possibly be.
No, you have, like, in the early years, up until, like, 7, you still have influence on your child. And then after that, it's actually the parents of the kids that your child spends time with that has the most impact on your child.
Which is scary.
Yes. but what I was going to say is also, like, just that love I have for my child. Like, I would sacrifice my life for him any day, easily. I wouldn't have to think about it for a split second. And then I think about, like, the way that God loves us and how, like, this is just a small taste of that. So I think, like, just through having a child, like, having a boy, and, like, getting to love him and getting to, like, go through, like, all his firsts that he's experiencing. And it's so funny because, like, we're so excited to put him to bed at the end of the day. And then we put him to bed, and then all we do is talk about him and how wonderful he is for the next hour after he's already sleeping. So just that, like, that immense, like, all-encompassing love, how that is also, like, actually, like, the way that God loves us and how he sees us. So I think it's put a lot of his heart into perspective for me, like, knowing that if I mess up 70 million times, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't change the love that he has for me. And, like, the forgiveness is never ending and all of that. So that's also been just, like, a wonderful experience as well.
I saw that video that you guys posted where he shouts, "I love you," from the roof or something. That's
yeah.
So cute.
Yeah, so he does that for an hour. Love you, mama.
It's adorable.
Love you, Dada. And you have to answer every time. Otherwise, it gets really upset with you.
That's so cute.
Screaming louder and louder. And then, yeah, like, obviously my husband and I are really trying to creates like a childhood for him where he doesn't have to worry, he can just be a child. That's really important to us as well.
Do you perhaps have a message for other young mothers out there that you just want them to know? Something that you might have struggled with, or just something, a theme of your life during motherhood that you would want to share?
So, yeah. It's obviously like one of the most life-altering things that can happen to you as a woman is to become a mother. But it's also so crazy because you just overnight gain abilities that they're like superpowers. So somehow, like before you had a child, you had the same amount of hours in the day. And you thought you were busy, but then you have a child and now you have to do all of that plus everything else you were doing. And in the beginning, it's like so overwhelming and you're like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. And then just somehow you adapt and you do that, you figure it out. But yeah, I think obviously as a mom, there's like a lot of ebbs and flows when you become a new mom. Obviously like a lot of insecurity as like whether you're going to be good enough, whether you're doing everything right. It's a lot of changes to your body, to your career, like everything changes in your life. And there's a lot of moments where you just feel like you don't know how you're going to get through this. But just to know that it's also like, it's not going to be like this forever. Like it gets easier. You get better at it. Like everything does work out and you will find yourself again or rediscover like this new version of yourself. Because it's very disorientating in the beginning. Like your whole identity shifts for living for yourself. And now that's not a thing anymore. Like you're someone else's mom. That's your identity. Yeah.
That's your role now.
Yes.
Tamsin, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being so authentic as you went through the journey and as you explained the moment when you found out and the descriptions that you had. I remember following you on social media and seeing those posts. And I think that's where it all, when I thought about of you becoming a guest, that's kind of what replayed in my head, is that the brutal simplicity and authenticity that you share your life with.
Thank you.
It has been inspiring for me. And I can only imagine the lives that you're going to still change in just living the way that you do and being through so many things and holding on to God and being rooted in finding your strength in that. I think that is one singular message that so many young ladies need to hear. So thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being vulnerable. We appreciate it. And I can't wait to see what you're still going to do and what God has in store for you and those promises that he gave you when you were lying on the bathroom floor. So I'm excited.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Me too. Thank you, Marku.